Calling all small firm architects, it's time to tap into your full potential with Entree Architects Context and Clarity, where inspiration meets innovation. Hey, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my two favorite co-hosts, Jeff Eccles and Katie Kangas, as they bring together authors, experts, and thought leaders for electric conversations with entrepreneur architects around the globe. It's not just a podcast, it's a community where dreams meet action.
There is a simple equation there. And what for me, what that did, just doing that basic calculation, was it allowed me to compare what I had actually saved in my retirement accounts to what I thought a possible projected annual spend might be.
Artists are temperamental, so beautiful design is going to be a priority. When the job is done, we're going to actually need to live in the house, not live with the person who designed it. And so for me, the artistic skill, the architectural skill is most important. And so I would say like that would be 60% of it, if not more.
Gain insights to build a successful practice. Subscribe, engage, and let's redefine your future together. Join the Context and Clarity community, where every conversation adds to your blueprint for success. My name is Mark R. LePage, and you are listening to Entree Architect Podcast, where each week I speak with inspiring, passionate people who share their knowledge and expertise, all to help you build a better business as a small firm entrepreneur architect. Lisa Sove, welcome to Entree Architect Podcast.
Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you here. This is going to be a very interesting conversation, I think. You have done so much in your career so far, and I want to talk about all the things that you're doing, specifically your work in the community and how you're sort of combining your firm and the things that you do with your firm and your passions, and how you sort of engage the community with doing that work, but also being able to provide resources and information and all kinds of things back to the community through what you're doing. And so super interesting, and I'm looking forward to that conversation. But let me introduce you first so everybody knows a little bit of background. I mentioned to you before we started recording that I usually do a little short bio and then go into an origin story, but there's so much good stuff here. I want everybody to know even just a little bit of what you're doing, and then we'll go deeper into your origin story. So let me share some of that. Lisa Sove is a licensed architect in the state of Michigan, co-founding principal and CEO of Synecdoche. I got it right. Third time.
Yes.
And it's an award-winning interdisciplinary architecture and creative practice with studios in Ann Arbor and Detroit. The studio has set precedent as a woman-owned firm that integrates fabrication and real estate development into the operations and investments of the studio. They're launching a product line this year from their bespoke designs from their in-house fabrication shop. Sounds like a lot of work, right? A lot of things going on. You better buckle in here. There's more. Lisa also recently founded Do Good Work, a 501c3 nonprofit whose mission is to strengthen the community of creators and artists with positive changes in resources and placemaking toward a strong and inclusive social, economic, and cultural fabric of their communities. Their goal is to translate many of the pro bono efforts done at Synecdoche into new programs that others may be able to also support. Lisa's also the co-founder of Studio Studio, a modern venue and co-working space for creatives and photographers, and partner at, is it Ivey?
Ivey.
Yep. It's spelled I-V-E-Y, that's why I asked. Yep. So a partner at Ivey, a non-binary gender-neutral salon in Ann Arbor. On top of all of that, Lisa teaches graduate courses and is a leading donor for the Architecture Student Grant Research Grant at Taubman College of Architecture and Urban Planning at the University of Michigan. In 2001, Lisa was recognized by Forbes on the Next 1000 list, recognized by AIA Michigan for the Young Architect Award and the University of Michigan Taubman College as the inaugural Outstanding Recent Graduate. And on top of all, 2021. What did I say?
2001.
2000. Oh, 2000. Did I say 2001?
Man, I wish I was a
It wasn't 20 years ago. It was last year, 2021. Wow. Okay. No, definitely not 2001. All right. So she also serves as a planning commissioner for the city of Ann Arbor, including on serving on the ordinance revision committee. And it just goes on and on and on and on and on and on. So I that sort of gives you sort of an overview of Lisa and what she's doing. So let's start, Lisa, where this all started. Who inspired you to become an architect, or what inspired you to become an architect? When did you discover your passion for this profession, and share that story to where we are today?
Yeah. My origin story is really an inspirational poster. I don't even know if it would be called inspirational, but my dad worked for Apple back in the 90s, early kind of sales and network nerd. And he had this poster, Matt Groening, before The Simpsons, created a poster for Apple computers called Bongo's Dream Dorm. And they handed it out to all the employees. And so it really is a section perspective of the most kind of radical cartoon dorm. And right, like I didn't know what a section perspective was when I was 10 years old, but I got kind of really consumed in that space. And so the idea of, you know, all of these spaces converging and how slip and slides and section cuts and things kind of went together just rolled me into drafting class in middle school. I took every single vocational architecture class in high school and went right in. So I knew from middle school, I think, that I wanted to be an architect, and really kind of charted my path.
Where did you discover architecture and the profession of architecture? So you saw that poster. Yeah. It fascinated you that this is an interesting drawing and how it's drawn and the perspective of it all, sort of you engaged with it. Where did you make that connection that there's architect and an architecture profession?
Yeah. So in my junior high school, we had kind of four segmented vocational, you know, it was like one was home ec, you know, we learned to sew and make cookies, and one was drafting, and there was keyboarding and things like that. One of them was drafting, and you know, we spent 9 weeks hand drafting, and so that was kind of my first entry point. Yeah. Of learning how to hand draft. And we got, you know, the final kind of project was like, go design your dream house. And then my high school actually had vocational classes, so district wide people from other high schools would come in and learn CAD and drafting at our school. And so I had just so many resources early on that I was introduced at a really young age. But I think in all of that, I was introduced to drafting, not architecture. Right. And it wasn't until I actually like went to college. So I went to Lawrence Tech for undergrad and then Michigan for grad school. And I think that's where I realized drafting is not architecture. And the more I was like introduced to the side I didn't understand, the more I actually got back to Bongo's Dream Dorm, right? Like I got back to kind of the fantasy and the inventiveness instead of the kind of mechanical pieces. So it really came full circle in kind of developing that curiosity.
So you go through school what happened after you go to architecture school? Did you go get a job, or what was the next step out of that?
Nope. Recession hit. So I was actually a single mom in undergrad, and that's where I met my current partner, Adam. And so at the end of undergrad, 2009, there just weren't jobs, right?
Yes, like, I remember that time well. Yeah.
So as a single mom, I was definitely not going to take a, you know, free internship. Like I can't take unpaid work. And so Adam and I found our first project on Craigslist, actually, a very small project in Detroit, and started from there. We got a check cut to buy materials because we were fabricating the thing, of this made up firm that we picked as Synecdoche, which came from the Philip Seymour Hoffman film that came out that year, Synecdoche, New York. So that's where the name comes from. And so we would go to the bank and they're like, you don't exist. What are we supposed to do with this? Trying to like cash it under a personal name. And so within a 24-hour period, I figured out how to form an LLC, create a business bank account, cash that check and buy materials. So that was like the very rapid fire and wow, unexpected start to Synecdoche. And that was the summer between undergrad and grad school. Right. And so then we went to grad school hoping, you know, a 2-year delay in the market will kind of recover. But it really became, we're going to do one project a year. And so the following year, we did a backyard artist studio for a friend. And then we won Young Architects Forum of Atlanta, their 10-up competition. And so right, we found out like during our midterm thesis reviews that we had won this competition. And so immediately after graduation, we're procuring materials, setting up and creating this pavilion to go down there. And so we kept that cadence going on for quite a few years until we ended up having 3 projects in a year. And that's when we decided, I guess we got to quit all of these other gigs and do the thing. And that was in 2015.
So 2015, you formalized it, made it a firm, and went all in.
Yep. Still unlicensed at the time too. So,
what kind of work were you doing as unlicensed architects starting the firm?
We were working with Architects of Record for several of our projects. A lot of interior renovation work. Not a lot of residential, right? So in Michigan, you can do a lot of residential to a scale without being licensed. It wasn't a type of project that we were that interested in. We really like the commercial work and working with small businesses. And so we really dove into figuring out how to partner and collaborate with other firms to be able to kind of execute on some of the designs that we did.
So you launched 2015, go in, start doing commercial work. How was that? Was it easy?
No. No, it wasn't easy at all. But the really nice, like we were learning, you know, along with our clients. One of our early mottos is we're a startup for startups. So we were very honest about we're starting up as well. We're all in this game of exploring and growing together. And I mean, we were very upfront too, like we're not licensed and these are all the kind of other things that have to go along with that and who we have to work with. So don't call us your architect, like, you know, we're your design team and things. But I think like setting that tone that we're a startup for startups, that we are like along the ride, really kind of helped in that relationship that we could really work with our clients in a way that we were really learning together.
What type of clients did you attract sort of positioning yourself that way?
A lot of like food truck to brick and mortar restaurant, what was a lot of the early work. And then there was a lot of tech startups. So getting seed funding, and we were kind of that transition of like, all right, you got your IKEA desks and you're moving ready. And now you want to kind of impress new board members or go for another, you know, round of funding. You've got to kind of style up and compete for talent. That's where we kind of jumped in. And so again, it was just that narrative of like kind of growing up. And so then we went from startups to growing up with growing up sort of thing. And so we were evolving with the kind of clients we were attracting pretty simultaneously.
Also, correct me if I'm wrong, but Detroit is in the midst of a renaissance and is, you know, reborn and becoming new things. And tech has a big part of that. A lot of investment going into Detroit. Was that also helpful, that sort of that environment of startups and sort of, you know, doing things differently sort of help you launch that way?
Yeah, I mean, actually a lot of the tech startup stuff happens in Ann Arbor with the University of Michigan, right? This is where Google happened. This is where Adobe happened. That's where a really heavy piece of capital has really come in. VC funding per capita really happens in Washtenaw County, Southeast Michigan, at a rate comparable to Austin, Texas, or San Francisco. So it's this really interesting like Midwest anomaly of like small college town. But having Detroit is this really complementary metropolis, and what you kind of do with that population exchange of 100,000 people in Ann Arbor and 1 million people, you know, in Detroit Metro. So I think that pairing of like heavy resources in a small town and, you know, like a urban kind of growth perspective, and kind of new ideas and like the new manifest destiny of Detroit, like that becomes like a really great way to kind of converge in the industry and push some stuff forward.
So did you build your brand around that? And you mentioned that sort of, you know, that you started up as a startup for startups. And then as you grew, your clients grew and your brand evolved. Were you sort of conscious of that and sort of position yourself and market yourself that way? Or is it sort of more of an evolution?
Definitely an evolution. And I think like these are all just things that we were naturally, you know, saying and reacting to. I think the first time we took a like brand stance per se was when we painted "Do Good Work" on the back of our fabrication wall at 12 feet tall. And it was still came out really naturally as something that we said in the office, like "Do good work and people will notice" is kind of the longhand about being an example in your community. And that doing something is going to build kind of that momentum and that ripple effect sort of thing. And so it was just like a declaration of, you know, like good work is, you know, at the base of what we do and like being good. And so I think that was a big transition to like declaring our brand, which I think has really trickled into the types of projects and ways we get invited to work with the community now.
So you mentioned community, Do Good Work came out of your practice. It is now a 501c3. So it's actually a separate entity where you can do that type of work. Where was that decision made? Was that also an evolution of the practice that you were doing and the types of work you were doing and saw an opportunity? Or was that sort of a strategic plan?
Yeah, always just an evolution, right? Like it became something that we were naturally doing pro bono work or self-initiated work or just, you know, like contributing to other things happening in the community, to the point that we're doing, you know, multiple self-initiated projects that we need a fiduciary for. Or like we can't take donations as a for-profit. And so like creating the nonprofit was a way to, while other people wanted to be involved, it's not as easy to kind of like jump into a for-profit. And as an architecture firm, like we take a very strong stance that we don't do unpaid work. And so like we can't take, you know, even like volunteer work per se just doesn't feel like a good fit. Where Do Good Work now is like something created from Synecdoche to be able to capture a lot of that and help other people feed into kind of that resource and like fine tune exactly the types of things that we're trying to tackle instead of just a lot of stuff kind of showing up and opportunities to take on.
Let's take a quick break to say thank you to our sponsors for their support of this episode. This episode is brought to you by BQE, the makers of BQE Core, Systems and Standard Operating Procedures. You already know that that's how to build a profitable business and find the freedom you want. You need systems and procedures. But you struggle with choosing which systems you need most and how to implement those systems quickly so you can get back to doing what you love most. The Designing Your Business Masterclass series was created by acclaimed architect and business consultant Douglas Teeger to help fellow architects and engineers run their firms more profitably while maintaining a healthy work-life balance. Douglas grew from a solo practitioner to become managing partner of his 30-plus person firm and then later sold his firm so he can do what he does today, helping architects be more successful at Teeger Consulting. On the third Wednesday of every month, Douglas dives deep into an essential topic that will strengthen the profitability of your firm and make it sustainable for growth in the years to come. Register now for the next Designing Your Business Masterclass with Douglas Teeger at bqe.com/masterclass and start implementing powerful systems for the profitability you need and the freedom you want. Every live masterclass session includes AIA continuing education credit, and when you visit bqe.com/masterclass, you'll have access to the full library of past sessions on demand. The Designing Your Business Masterclass is free, and it's brought to you by our friends at BQE, the makers of BQE Core, the software that makes it easy to manage your projects and people for maximum productivity and ultimate profitability. Register now for the Designing Your Business Masterclass at bqe.com/masterclass. That's bqe.com/masterclass. This episode is brought to you by FreshBooks. There's a lot to love about being an entrepreneur architect, right? But trying to figure out your financials on your own is not one of those things. Luckily, there's FreshBooks, the all-in-one accounting solution that's built for business owners like us. FreshBooks takes all the not-so-fun parts of running a business, from building and tracking invoices to managing online payments to organizing expenses, and automates them, with features like the new digital bills and receipt scanner, saving you up to 11 hours per week in the process. 11 hours. FreshBooks has your back at tax time too. It's almost tax time. With a ton of reports to choose from, you'll know exactly where your business stands, and you can easily hand the keys over to your accountant so they can take over when it's time to reconcile everything for the year. Try FreshBooks. Try FreshBooks for free for 30 days. No credit card required. It's free. Go to FreshBooks.com/architect. FreshBooks.com/architect to get started today. That's FreshBooks.com/architect. So, what will you do with your 11 more hours each week? This episode is brought to you by Arcat.com. We all have that one story, that one project that had such a unique situation that it required a solution that you had rarely considered before. We share these stories in private professional circles with our friends and our colleagues, but there has never been a collection of these stories of conflict and triumph all in one place. Until now. Detailed is a podcast series that features architects, engineers, builders, and manufacturers who share their insights and expertise as they highlight some of the most complex, interesting, and oddball building conditions that they have ever encountered, and the ingenuity it took to solve them. Join host Charisse Lakeside, aka CSI Kraken, a senior specifications writer at RDH Building Science, as she uncovers lessons learned to help you navigate similar challenges that may arise in your next project. Detailed, an original podcast by Arcat. Listen and subscribe right now at arcat.com/podcast. That's arcat.com/podcast. arcat.com/podcast. Detailed, every building has a story. Please visit our sponsors today and thank them. Thank them for supporting you, the Entree Architect community. What type of projects does Do Good Work do in order to, so you said you did some self-initiated projects and then you needed this entity in order to be able to you know, expand on it. What type of those projects are you doing?
Yeah, so we've done like a couple pop-up installations for like community art festivals around town. In 2020, I helped organize and spearhead a local murals festival. So we did 10 murals in town. So it was the fundraising, the coordinating with building owners and artists. We just got a donated food truck from a client who's moving into their second restaurant. And so they didn't need the food truck anymore. And we said, hey, can we have it? We'd love to take what we have in our fabrication shop and make a mobile version of it. That takes a lot more resources than a one day, you know, pop-up installation. And so those are the types of projects that rolling into Do Good Work as a nonprofit really helps catalyze, you know, a lot more momentum and like stickiness, for the long term, instead of these kind of like short iterative kind of fun things on the side.
Yeah. It sounds like much of what you do is community driven, that you do it specifically to give back and improve the community around you. What inspired that? I mean, that's more than an evolution of that just happened. Is it something about who you are or where you've come from that sort of inspired you to do that? What inspired that type of work?
It's hard. Like, it just feels natural, right? If I reflected enough, you know, I'd probably recognize that, you know, as a single mom for a long time, like building a village of support, mm-hmm. makes a big impact of, you know, between mentorship and resources and things. And so figuring out how to pay it forward. But even building a firm, even when we were not licensed, and having a firm support instead of seeing us as competition, but collaboration, so that we could get through projects, accumulate the hours, and then become licensed ourselves. In the end, I think a lot of these kind of experience moments built up to recognizing if we make a stronger community, it creates a better place for us to do business too, right?
Yeah, 100%.
Right? So like, why wouldn't you like invest in your community? It's not all a give. At the end of the day, we all kind of win from it and we can build better projects and things. I think that's also like why I'm on Planning Commission. Yeah. Like, we should create better zoning ordinances that support more equitable development, more sustainable development, more affordable development. And a lot of ordinances and things need to change to really help incentivize those sorts of things going forward. Yeah. So as a volunteer role, I'll see you every Tuesday night for several hours debating all of these things.
Yeah. Amazing. All of the work that you do. You touched on the fact that along the way you did hours in order to get licensed. Can you talk about that a little bit? Because I'm sure there's lots of listeners that heard that and they're like, how did she do that? Right. Yep. She launched her firm right out of school, actually in between going to school, right? Launched it. It was born yep. between graduate and undergraduate, and then went to graduate school and then did it again right out of graduate school, and then eventually formalized it, but still working non-licensed, and then you became licensed. So how did that process work for you?
Yeah. So my first chunk of hours came from my thesis advisor, actually. We were hired as research assistants after grad school. She's a licensed architect. And so even though we were doing more research-based work, it qualified under kind of different segments. But yeah, a good chunk of the hours too came from our architect of record signing off on our hours, right? Like, they're reviewing our documents as if we're working in the studio, right? Giving us the same feedback. We're just kind of segregated by an LLC, but that similar oversight and mentorship was still happening. And we got our hours signed off that way. So, and that's what, you know, I started right from middle school and be like, all right, you go to undergrad and you go to grad school. Like, you have to do these things to be an architect. And then like life happened and I took a completely different road, but it's important to kind of figure out alternative paths, really work, and should be supported and transparent. And I think right now there's just a linear path that seems to be the only visible way. So.
Yeah. And NCARB, I mean, I've spoken to NCARB. NCARB is out there trying to change that. They're trying to work on alternative ways of getting licensed. And I think they're working hard at that. They're hearing us say things like that. And they're working at, actually right now, I'm not sure if this episode will be sponsored by it, but NCARB sponsored this podcast and many others while they were doing their survey specifically for that, to get feedback on how they can work on their alternative ways of getting licensed. Go ahead.
I was like, NCARB's been, it's been pretty seamless on their end. It's actually been, you know, some architects in our community really kind of pushing back on the path, and like our natural tendency to compete and gatekeep, that's probably holding our profession back more than NCARB figuring out how to actually open the gates.
Yes.
So, I mean, there's so many players, you know, in this field to help, hopefully, you know, smooth over to make things easier.
Yeah. Yeah. And now you're talking my language, because that's one of my missions is to make the profession more transparent so we can all thrive together. And Entree Architect is all about that, sharing, which is that it's how this podcast started in 2012, was me sharing what I knew in order to inspire other architects to share what they know, and make a shift, really change the way the profession works. And I see it. I see it definitely changing. I think through the work that I'm doing and lots of others are doing, but also through your generation and the generation that's coming behind you comes to that naturally. They're expecting that transparency and sharing of knowledge.
Totally.
And so the profession is shifting, and everyone else will have to shift with it. It's exciting to see it happening.
I mean, that's why we also, the ASRG grant, the Architecture Student Research Grant that we fund, started funding. We're starting to get other alumni to kind of show up. But like our first project, the budget was $1,500. In the end, it won Inc.com and Architizer, you know, like World's Coolest Office Award. And it was the one that had forced us to form an LLC and get a business bank account. And so we fund several $1,500 projects at the University of Michigan, but they're not coursework. They're independent grants that students have to write, and then independent projects that they can create. And the whole idea is like, the smallest bit of funding really can be a catalyst to start something new. And we've seen students be like, maybe, you know, we worked as a team together. Maybe we could form a studio right out of school doing this thing. And the more we can find different ways to kind of support that and say, yeah, try it, please. Like, yes. I actually want more competition, like in the arena, because it's going to push us all to be better. Like, nobody can do what any individual can do, right? So sharing all the secrets, it's like giving a chef and then giving a 10-year-old the same ingredients, right, and say, make me dinner. You're not going to get the same meal out of it. Yeah. And so why are we guarding some of these things?
Yeah.
Like, when really we should just be fostering it up.
And there are no secrets. Business is business, right? And some of us can do business in different ways and innovative ways to be more successful at it, but the fundamentals are the same. And so much of what is hoarded in the past centuries is just business fundamentals, and which are typically, you know, in our profession, learned in secret, right? Because then no one shared it. We weren't taught that in architecture school. There was no business school for architects. And so we all had to do that on our own and struggle for decades before we figured out the way that it might work for us, rather than sharing that knowledge to everybody you know and letting architects who are entering the profession become very successful very quickly, and the entire profession become stronger and more, and which benefits the world for sure.
Yep. That's like that first project. I'll go back to that first project again. It was one of our faculty that we told that we got this commission, and he was like, do you have a contract? And we're like, no, we're senior year of undergrad. What pro practice class did we take yet? He's like, let me send you a draft contract, you know, like, fill this thing out. If you like don't understand, I'll tell you what's boilerplate stuff, and I'll, you know, give me a draft back for me to fill out, but have a contract. And like, we wouldn't even known,
right,
to have one or where to find one, you know, without kind of those resources, and somebody just basically like pushing that resource on us. And I mean, I probably get, you know, an email a month, who's your CPA, who's your lawyer, you know, sort of thing for architects starting up in the community. I'm like, here, if they're my favorite, here's their contact info, sort of thing. And the more of that sort of knowledge exchange, you know, it's like, you don't, in the end, you don't want to have some other firm fail, because it leaves a bad taste in the mouth of a client, and then the client loses faith in our industry.
Right.
And you want clients to have the best experience with our industry so that our value is declared, right? Yeah. And that we can really reinforce what value we offer, instead of being like, I hope you fail so I can get something. Well, shoot, we're all going to fail, because that's then our brand.
Yeah. And that's the story of our profession for centuries.
Yep.
But I'm an optimist, and it's shifting. I can see it shifting. I've experienced it for 20 years. Plus that I've been in the profession. It is shifting in those 20 years. It's dramatically different. When I first started this podcast, I would talk about money in any way, and I would get a very well-meaning, kind architect emailing me or messaging me privately to not talk about money because that's against the rules. And I'd have to explain to them that that's not against the rules, and that's, it's something we need to shift and change. And I don't get those messages anymore. It's out there. We're all talking about it. It's part of doing good business, is understanding how money flows in and out of our firms. And so
totally, I mean, we're hiring and, you know, posted salaries. And I had people, you know, like DM me and say, thank you for posting this. I was like, who, like, this should not be a thank you. There should not be a thank you extended to this. We should be this transparent. We should like hold each other accountable. Like, this is both what we can afford and wow, that's what you're paying somebody, sort of thing. Yep. Like, those just seem like norms. And I think that's where even like learning beyond our industry, and again, kind of going back to like doing good work and being in the community, you hear from different perspectives and industries about how they're working on equity and justice, how they're responding to community needs. You say, how can I fold that back in with my expertise and within, you know, my studio? And so I think that's, you know, a lot of what we do is we're trying to like replicate and apply a lot of those conditions into our studio. And so we're also not looking too much about like, what are other architects doing? We're like, what are other businesses doing,
right,
that are doing good? And then how do we fold that into our industry instead of repeat? Because other industries are more transparent, right? Or yep, are more helpful, or don't see you as competition, because they're like, I'm a tech office. You're a service industry. Nobody's going to invest in you. Here's all the goods.
Yeah. So, yeah, exactly. Yeah. I love hearing you say that. And I hear other architects saying that.
Yeah.
And it's very quickly shifting. When I introduced you, I went through a whole list of things, and there were many, many more that I didn't mention. It sounds to me, through now talking with you, that much of your evolution has been you saying yes, seeing an opportunity, and not knowing how yes is going to work, but just saying yes and going for it. Talking to other architects who are listening, other young architects who are listening, who are about to start their own firm, do you have any recommendations or thoughts about that for them as they start? Because it's a scary thing to start an architecture firm. And a lot of architects don't start it just out of the fear of not knowing. What would you say to those architects if they asked you those questions?
Your skin gets thicker and you can sleep better at night. Right? Like, there are early projects that I would lose sleep over, right? And you fret. And then you think about the, you know, it's like 10 years in, the same problem show up and you're like, well, we'll solve that in the next hour sort of thing, right? So new is scary, but it doesn't need to be bad. And I think one of the big things, like I just mentioned, is looking outside of the industry, right? Like looking more broadly about the type of practice you want to create. You might be inspiration way outside of architecture, right? I think that there's so many different opportunities now between the internet, between how funding for companies is structured, right? Like business loans seems like the most archaic form of funding at this point versus like VC and bootstrapping and things. So like really thinking broadly about how you want to integrate the different elements from the most inspirational kind of work, I think is the best first start. And then, yeah, say yes. And it's scary, but it really won't hurt you.
Yeah.
It's your insurance.
Exactly. Have insurance. It'll give you courage.
Yep.
Purpose is something that clearly is driving you. Is that purpose, obviously, to give back to the community? Was that conscious from the beginning? Did you recognize that purpose early on and say, okay? And I asked you a similar question earlier, but how much does that purpose drive you today, and where is it going to take you in the future?
I think we've realized that while leaning into it, it's only made us better, the projects better, you know, and our community better. So there's no reason not to be purpose driven. In the end, you know, we've really recognized that people in the community are watching us. We are kind of setting precedent, right? We did the first all-inclusive bathrooms. We had to petition to the building Board of Appeals. We utilized that research and shared it with architects nationally to say, this is how we defended the IBC about their sloppy definition of toilet room, bathroom, et cetera, to make our own interpretation that got approved. So like there's purpose, you know, that can hit in a small way. And then there's purpose that creates influence that can hit in a big way. Going back to like those bathrooms, one of our team members who went to a bigger office took that knowledge and applied it to the LinkedIn corporate offices that they were designing. LinkedIn loved it so much, they're integrating it to all of their future offices to do all-inclusive bathrooms instead of the binary structure. So no stalls, right? All single use. And that's something that we had influence over. And so recognizing that like small kind of purpose-driven, you know, projects could influence in a multitude of ways that's harder to track, right? So the metrics of that, like from our end, it's like, I don't have a spreadsheet that I can show like performance metrics, but it can do something good. And so, yeah, I think there's a lot of different ways that performance is good for business too.
Is there a connection between purpose and saying yes?
Sure. Maybe it's like, it's giving everything a chance, right? And maybe that's the best way to define it. Having others recognize and give me a chance, give Synecdoche a chance and everybody on our team, I feel like when I'm given an opportunity, it's a way to give myself in the studio a chance. But also sometimes it's like projects that are really small or like a weird ask. And it's like, if I don't say yes, will someone else, right? Like, could this thing happen without me or not, you know, or without us? And I think that's where recognizing how to give a hand forward and give others a chance is maybe where the yes comes from.
Yeah. You're very inspiring for sure. You're doing a lot of good out there, and you're a role model to many other firms that want to do the things that you're doing, and might just be afraid to try. And so I appreciate you for doing it, but also for coming on the show here and sharing it so others can be inspired by it.
Thank you.
Before we wrap things up, I wanted to ask you the one question I ask everybody. You're talking to thousands of small firm architects, lots of sole practitioners, lots of people who have recently started their firms. What's one thing that a small firm architect can do today to build a better business for tomorrow?
Find some other industry to talk to and integrate yourself into, right? I think that I think has been the biggest thing, you know, learning SOPs from restaurant world, learning VC and seed funding, you know, rounds from the tech world. Like, these are all very practical applications in other industries that are just now showing up into our format. So find another industry and figure out how to translate and apply that, because like translation as a design process is going to get you further in both your business and your projects.
Lisa Sauve is her name. You can learn more about the firm and all the projects that they're doing at synecdotydesign.com. You don't have to worry about how to spell it. It's going to be on the show notes. Just go to the show notes and click the link and go check it out. Doing so many interesting things. Definitely go check them out. Lisa, thank you for being so inspiring and doing the work that you're doing, being a role model for other architects. And thank you for stopping by here and sharing your story with me. I appreciate you, and I appreciate all you're doing.
Thanks so much, Mark. I really appreciate it.
If you liked this episode of Entree Architect Podcast, please share a rating, write a review, go write a review. I would love to know what you think of this podcast, and it helps other architects find us. So go do 5-star rating if you like it. Share, write a review. I'd love it. And share a link to this episode with a friend, because that's how we've grown. That's how Entree Architect has grown to serve thousands of architects throughout the world, just like you. Thank you to our sponsors, RCAT, FreshBooks, and BQE for their support of this episode. I ask you to support them because they support us. And if they're supporting us, they're supporting you. So go support them. Got it? Go support our sponsors. Links to our sponsors. So you can click on those links and go right to them. Links to our sponsors and all the resources we shared today are available at the show notes for this episode at entrearchitect.com/podcast. All the shows are there, entrearchitect.com/podcast. Entree Architect is a member of the Gable Media Podcast Network. Gable Media is curated thought leadership for an audience dedicated to building a better world. Listen and subscribe to all the shows. I think there are 11 of them there now. Go there, gablemedia.com. That's GABLmedia.com. And I hope you're going to join us in Austin November 1st through November 3rd, 2022. Those are the dates for the Entree Architect Community Annual Meeting, our first ever live and in-person conference for you, the small firm architect community. Visit entrearchitect.com/annual meeting right now to learn more. That's entrearchitect.com/annual meeting, and I will see you in Austin in November. Don't miss this. This is going to be great. entrearchitect.com/annual meeting. It's a conference for you, small firm architects. Thank you for listening today to this episode of Entree Architect Podcast. Love, learn, and share what you know.
From historic homes to modern architecture, brick is one of the most popular building materials around the world.
How to allow the house to bridge the gap between the history of the site, the approachability of this kind of architecture in this kind of neighborhood, and the sort of nostalgia of materiality for the client's past, right? And brick really started to provide an answer for that.
Hi, I'm Doug Pat, and this is Design Vault. There aren't many materials that easily blend with any style and context, but brick does just that. I've seen some extraordinary work with brick, so when Glengarry approached me about hosting this podcast, I couldn't say no.
typically Tudor-style houses from outside are just stunningly gorgeous piece of structure. And when you go in, it's just sad.
Yeah.
Dark. And that is not going to happen with my approach to design.
I speak with industry leaders and share inspiring stories behind their work and ingenious design.
You'll see brick that's fashioned into basket weave patterns, sawtooth patterns, what's known in England as diapering.
Doesn't sound like you knew them per se, right? They found you through relationships that you had with other.
Well, wait, Doug, there's more.
Okay.
We'll go behind the scenes to understand process and even the inspiration that sparked the design.
You know, I think we were inspired by all the factory buildings in Dumbo. I mean, that is the kind of period of significance, that early American factory building.
Design Vault by Glenn Gary. Visit glengarry.com/design-vault or search for Design Vault wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe now to stretch your imagination.
Attention architects and creative minds, get ready to supercharge your brand with Build Your Brand, the podcast that's unlocking the secrets of branding success for creatives. Hey there, it's Mark Arlepage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my friend, architect marketing expert, Jeff Eccles at Build Your Brand podcast, where he explores the captivating stories of the world's top brands and transforms their lessons into powerful moves for small firm architects and creatives like you. In season one, Jeff shares the thrilling tale of Southwest Airlines, where he dissects their journey to the summit and distills it into strategies tailor-made for you.
It's important to keep in mind that companies like Southwest compete in the real world, just like you, and face real-world challenges, just like you. You might be surprised at how similar those challenges are to the struggles that you grapple with on a day-to-day basis.
Don't miss out on your blueprint for success. Subscribe, tune in, and let's build your brand together.
You may have noticed that the very best brands in the world are also known for having somewhat unique corporate cultures. That's often the glue that holds everything together when they encounter those rough spots.
We don't do it because it inconveniences the passengers to whom we are primarily dedicated, the short-haul frequent flyer.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Build Your Brand today. Remember, no matter the size, the journey's the same. Your brand's journey to the top starts here.